This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. Welcome into the Gabe Kuhn Show. I am Connor Dunning, former Memphis Tigers videographer, filling in for Gabe Kuhn while he's out. You can find me at CDunning929 on X and Twitter. I'm also over on Blue Sky. Just search Connor Dunning and I should pop up. We're a quarter into the NBA season, and your Memphis Grizzlies sit at number two in the West. I think it's time to take a look at the rest of the conference and see where everyone is. How much of a contender are the Memphis Grizzlies in the Western Conference? We'll talk about that in the open today. At 425, 430, we will have Bluff City Media's Christian Fowler on to talk Memphis football, Memphis basketball, and college football playoffs. The great Jeff Calkins will join us at 5 o'clock, and I want his opinion on the college football playoff and the SEC discussion happening. Then we'll have the Blitz and Small Talk to wrap up the show. As always, I am joined by the Honorable King George George Ruggiero. You can find him on Twitter at KingGeorge94. George, what's up?
How's it going?
Oh, nothing much. Bit of a slower news day in sports.
Yeah, a little bit.
I think is the biggest story of the day, the Bill Belichick manifesto that got given to North Carolina.
For today, I think it would have to be. Of all people, to be able to have that hit the news and everybody look at it and be like, yeah, that's about right.
It's not weird.
It's only Bill.
How many people would it be weird to have a 400-page document on college football and how to run a program? Would it be weird if it was anybody else? Probably so. But it's Bill Belichick, so of course, par for the course.
I can only think of one other person it would not be weird for, and that's actually Bill Parcells. Those are like the only two people I could
ever
see.
It's got to be a Bill.
It has to be a Bill. I mean, we are talking about the two Bills when I bring that up, but those are the only two people that I think could get away with that, and everyone look at it and be like, actually, yeah, that's about normal. That's about par for the course.
We'll dive into that a little bit more in the Blitz, but I do want to open on the Memphis Grizzlies, and they have a bit of a break here. You heard Santi Aldama talking to Rob Fisher about it after they absolutely walked the Wizards, which the Wizards, what a horrific team that is. I still have no idea how the Nuggets lost to them on a 56-point triple-double from Nikola Jokic. I just don't understand how you can lose that type of basketball game. That is a game that you lose and you start slamming all the panic buttons, because if you get 56 points and a triple-double from Nikola Jokic, in no world should you be losing to the Washington Wizards.
Timeout, real quick, on that game specifically. I forgot who in the media it was, but I swear I heard someone say that Jokic should not really be in the MVP conversation because he's putting up empty stats.
Sure.
Empty numbers.
Yep, empty numbers.
What?
I mean, honestly, can you argue against it? He scored 56 points in a loss. Ah, impact winning, big fella. Let me see it. Oh, wait, he has a ring? Oh, never mind. Let me shut up. Maybe a dumb point when you're talking about somebody that already has won a championship.
Plus,
with the Denver Nuggets.
It's not just that. Like, even in a game where he puts up a 56-point triple-double and they don't win, look at who's playing around him. The only other people that contributed in that game meaningfully were Christian Brown and MPJ. And you look at the rest of the roster and you're like, huh? They're playing in Denver? Well, that makes sense now, I guess.
So right now, the Grizzlies are second in the Western Conference. The only team they are behind are the Oklahoma City Thunder. The Thunder are 18-5. The Grizzlies are 17-8. They are two games back of the Thunder. But in their last 10 games, they are 9-1, and they are currently on a three-game winning streak. And yes, when you look at the schedule, you see that the teams the Grizzlies are playing are teams that they should absolutely beat. And guess what? They've been beating those teams. And outside of a 19-point collapse that they had,
against a good team, mind you.
Collapse
unless
they had against the Dallas Mavericks.
Dallas is a good team.
Dallas is a good team. Also got 26 free throws in a quarter, something we've never seen before.
We're past this. We're past
this. It took something that we've never seen before to stop the Memphis Grizzlies during this 10-game run that they have been on. But I think the biggest stat that we have from this run and from the Grizzlies' early season is when they have the trio, when Desmond Bane, John Morant, Jaren Jackson Jr. are on the floor together, the Grizzlies are 6-1 in those games and have a 10-plus differential. That is very important for this Memphis Grizzlies team, and it is why I keep saying, as long as these three guys are healthy when you're heading into the playoffs, as long as you have the trio healthy, the Grizzlies have a shot. I picked them to make it to the Western Conference Finals in my preseason picks. I still very much believe in that. I think that early season returns have shown that that was a intelligent pick to make. The Memphis Grizzlies are one of the only teams in the NBA, the only team in the NBA that have a top five defense, top five offense. They've been beating people in different ways this season. Jaren Jackson Jr. is playing at an all-NBA level, at an all-star level at minimum, but definitely playing at an all-NBA level. Desmond Bane's still getting his footing underneath him a little bit, but he's showing up in big moments. That Boston game was very important. Hit a couple big shots in that game. Seems like he's still kind of dealing with something from that oblique strain. Yeah. He hasn't been necessarily himself since he's come back, but I'm not necessarily concerned with Desmond Bane at all.
I was going to say, and because it's been like the whole season that we were kind of looking at Des and saying, okay, something's not quite right, I do wonder if it comes down to him fitting into the offense a little bit better and finding his footing there. But it very well also could be that oblique. I mean, it's a back injury.
He's also dealing with toe soreness, which has plagued him in the past. We've seen that be a Desmond Bane injury in the past. But when you look at the Western Conference right now, you got the Houston Rockets at 3, Dallas at 4, Golden State at 5. A surprise at number 6, you have the L.A. Clippers having a very good season out there despite all the injuries that they've been battling through. And a report came out that Kawhi Leonard has been, you know, tearful. He's had tearful meetings with Ty Lue about letting down his basketball team and not being able to play, and they're still hoping to see him on the court at some time this season. But I think James Harden's done a great job. Powell, man, walking bucket, has been for a while, has shown up in a big way for the Clippers this season. Then at number 7, you still have the Denver Nuggets. He's not impacting winning, though. They're only 7th in the Western Conference with a dog team and a ton of injuries, but Nikola Jokic is not impacting winning. And then number 8, you got the Los Angeles Lakers, 9, the Minnesota Timberwolves, and 10, the Phoenix Suns. So what I want to do is I want to look at this top 10 in the Western Conference and try to figure out who the actual contenders are a quarter into the season. I think the Oklahoma City Thunder are absolutely a true contender.
100%.
Most people have them going to the NBA Finals. Some people have them winning the NBA Finals.
That team top to bottom. I mean, if we want to talk about a team with depth, with scoring, with defense, I mean, they're a team that can truly beat you in a handful of different ways. Their defense has been really, really surprising.
Unbelievable.
The start of the season. It's been so good. And keep in mind, I believe Chet is also out with an injury.
Chet's out for a while. He broke his hip.
Yeah, he'll be out for a while, but if they're able to get him back to play what I would assume would be the 4, because Hartenstein has been an absolute monster playing the 5 since he's been back from injury, that's a scary team. SGA is also phenomenal.
The Thunder have the best defense in the NBA.
Okay,
defense in the NBA, and they're going to get Chet Holmgren back.
Yeah. Just
Alex Caruso's been a great fit for them. Lou Dort, even though he's a bit of a dirty player, and absolutely flopped and ended up hurting Brandon Ingram, who is now out indefinitely. Thank God that injury bug, knock on wood, has gone from the Memphis Grizzlies to the New Orleans Pelicans. Pray for the team that it will go to next season, because it seems like it's making its rounds. It's like the plague, and it will come for you eventually.
Every year.
Every year it's going to come for somebody, and just unfortunately this year it has come for the Pelicans. But no, the Oklahoma City Thunder are absolutely the favorites from the Western Conference right now. Number 1 defense in the NBA, number 8 offense in the NBA. They have the number 1 net rating at +11.9. They're only giving up 103 points per game right now, which is crazy in today's NBA, only giving up 103 points per game. They're taking care of business against bad teams, but that's also what the Grizzlies are doing. The Grizzlies are taking care of bad business against bad basketball teams, and that is what you have to do to be successful in the regular season. I do think the Houston Rockets being at number 3 is a bit of a surprise.
I agree.
It's not a huge one, but it is a bit of a surprise. Ime Udoka was my pick for Coach of the Year. I think that's looking pretty good right now.
He's done a good job there.
He has injected maturity into that basketball team. I think that Fred VanVleet's been very important for them. I think that Dylan Brooks has been really important for the Houston Rockets. He helps them set an identity. Now, it's going to be interesting because they have a lot of young talent down there. A lot of young talent. So much young talent that some people aren't getting minutes. Looking at you, Reed Sheppard. Not getting minutes. Is Jalen Green ever going to turn into that superstar player that we think he can be? He shows flashes of it every once in a while. The one thing that's concerning about him is most of his highlight plays come in the fast break. He very much depends on the fast break. We need to see more half-court stuff from Jalen Green to see where he can actually go. Now, that being said,
he's averaging almost 20 a night.
He's good. He's a very good basketball player. It's can he go up to that next level?
Yeah.
Sangoon, all-star.
I think
all-star
he's at that
level player. Sangoon, baby Jokic, as people like to call him. He's been playing fantastic. Thompson looks unbelievable. The Swiss Army knife the Thompson twins are.
And the fact that he's coming off the bench and doing that has been super impressive from my man Thompson.
They are an interesting basketball team. Terry Eason's having a fantastic season, too. Are they a trade candidate to go out there and get a big name? I say yes. They have a lot of young talent, a lot of movable contracts. I would keep an eye on the Houston Rockets. I do think that they are a contender. I do not expect them to make it out of the Western Conference, though. I don't really expect them to make it to the Western Conference Finals. I think that they're still a year or two away.
Agreed.
But they are that young, plucky team of the season, very much like we've seen from the Grizzlies in the past, very much like we've seen from the Thunder in the past. You always kind of have that one team that pops up and says, hey, we are here. We have arrived now. You're going to have to deal with us. We may not be in true contention, but we're going to be here for the next few seasons. That has been the Houston Rockets this year. And then the Dallas Mavericks, no surprise that they are there. Most people have them in the top four. They're trucking along. They've been dealing with injuries. They've been playing fantastic even when Luka isn't in there. Are they too heliocentric with Luka Doncic to get it done in the playoffs? We shall see. It worked out for them last year, but they also needed P.J. Washington to go absolutely ballistic from three against the Thunder in that series to make it to the NBA Finals.
He's been good this year, too,
to
give P.J., you know, the credit that he deserves, give him his flowers. And for what it's worth as well, with that Mavericks team, it's not only Luka. Kyrie has also
been
very, very good. They've got a bunch of pieces on that team. It will be interesting to see what they do down the stretch. I don't necessarily know because when it comes to adding pieces later, because they did so much of that at the deadline last year and they've maintained those pieces. Namely, Daniel Gafford has been fantastic for them, especially in essentially a supporting role. Derek Lively has been great.
He's great. He's very good. Very, very good. They are also on a streak in which they've won 9 of their last 10. The Dallas Mavericks are cooking right now, so keep an eye on them. The Golden State Warriors, I think they're going to hang around 5, 6, 7 the rest of the season. I'm not too worried about them. However, they are another team that could make a big trade and things get interesting. I know that all of a sudden LeBron James rumors have been happening, and it would be, I don't think it's going to happen, but LeBron James on the Warriors would be something to pay attention to if that were to happen. But the deal has been, if you get LeBron, you're also getting, surprise, you're getting Bronny. So do you want to also trade for Bronny? But the Golden State Warriors are having a pretty good season. It's just how much longer can Steph carry them? That's really going to be it. They need that third guy to really show up. Buddy Hield had a hot start to the season, but he has been rough in the last 10 games. If you have not seen Buddy Hield's last 10 games,
don't.
Warning, you might have to wash your eyes out when you go look at his box scores and his game logs over the last 10. They have been rough. They need Jonathan Kuminga to step up. Andrew Wiggins remembers how to play basketball again. Draymond Green's been great this season. And then the Clippers, already talked about them. Norm Powell and James Harden have been leading them to wins, 14-11. Their defense isn't great, but they've been scrappy enough. Zubac has been pretty good for them this season. Then Denver Nuggets, we've talked about them enough. It's really about, can they stay healthy? Can Jamal Murray get his leg back? That's all that's going to matter for them, because Nikola Jokic is going to drag this team into the playoffs. And the Lakers feels like they're in free fall, but they're 13-11. But it absolutely feels like they're in free fall. They are one of those teams very similar to what we're seeing with the Milwaukee Bucks right now. Were they able to put it together early in the season because of their schedule? Or was it signs of things to come? With the Lakers, at least, it's because of the schedule. With the Bucks, feels like it's part of their schedule right now, but we shall see. We shall see if they can continue the momentum they're on. And then two teams that you don't expect to be at the bottom of the Western Conference playoffs right now. The Minnesota Timberwolves, chemistry out the window. Turns out that trade, not very good. Turns out when you make it to the Western Conference Finals, maybe, just maybe, you should give your young group of guys a little bit more of a run. I understand that they didn't want to have to pay Karl Anthony Towns, but Julius Randle and Dante DiVincenzo is the best you could get for Karl-Anthony Towns. At the time when the trade happened, Gabe and I said, we think the Knicks got better, and we think the Timberwolves are about the same. We're a little worse. Turns out, a little worse. That team chemistry is something for real. Seems like nobody likes Rudy Gobert. Nobody likes Rudy Gobert. Julius Randle certainly doesn't like Rudy Gobert.
To be fair to those two players, when you guys say chemistry, there is no way that the two of them could ever work at the same pace offensively. Their offense has been like so bad relative to what they were last year.
Now,
which, I mean, I'm just saying, if you want to go look at some good basketball from a big, Cat's playing pretty well.
He's playing very well. He's playing very well. Now, the good news for the Timberwolves is they have begun to turn it around just a little bit. They were taking a lot of threes at the beginning of the season. That slowed down a little, but they are an aging basketball team at some very important positions. Does Mike Conley continue to run point for them all season? That's going to be something to keep an eye on because they do have Dillingham up there, which is going to be an interesting thing. Do you put him in? Do you give him a run? The few moments we've seen him this season, he's been interesting. He's been interesting. Very talented player. And then the Phoenix Suns, it's all about health with them. When they have Kevin Durant, they've lost one game. They've lost one game with Kevin Durant. Is Kevin Durant playing? Yes or no? If he is playing, the Phoenix Suns are probably going to win. If he's not playing, they're probably going to lose. It's as simple as that.
It's such a weird issue with them because they do have other really nice pieces. I think Tyus Jones there is a good piece.
He is a good piece.
Devin Booker is still one of the better scorers from his position in the NBA, but we talked about it before with them. They have zero depth. They have no depth.
Well,
it is,
their center stinks.
It is
Nurkic
their stars
stinks.
Or nothing.
I hate their big man rotation. I hate it. Yusuf Nurkic and Mason Plumlee's not going to get it done.
Ooh, I forgot Plumlee was their second option.
Plumlee's not bad.
He's not.
But when Nurkic is your starter, all right, good luck.
But that's the point. I mean, when I say they have no depth, I mean it. I mean, they don't really have much in terms of front court other than Durant. I mean, how much
Royce
trust?
O'Neal's not bad. He's Ryan not Dunn's bad, been good, but he's hurt.
How much of that? I mean, these are, we say not bad, but they're almost at replacement level.
Aging. Well, it's aging. They're aging guys that they're depending on this season. So I think that they are still going to be a team to deal with in the playoffs if they can stay healthy, but I'm surprised to see them there. But ultimately, I do think that the teams that I expect to see in the Western Conference playoffs this year are in the top 10 right now. Like, could the Spurs sneak in? Sure. Could the Kings sneak in? Sure. But this looks like it's going to be correct. The team that I would say is most likely to drop out is probably the Lakers. Of these 10, if I had to expect one team to drop out, it would be the Lakers. And if I had to expect one team to jump in, it'd probably be the Kings. So we might see them swap. But the Jazz are left for dead. The Pelicans are left for dead. The Trailblazers are left for dead. So it's really, can the Kings and could the Spurs fight their way in to the top 10? We shall see.
I think the Spurs certainly can. I mean, we've all said Wemby is, I mean, his defense has been incredible. They've got an emerging star in Stephon Castle, who I think we all liked coming out of the draft.
Chris Paul's been very good.
And the thing is, for Chris Paul, I think he's done a great job really as mentoring some of those younger guards that they have, especially Castle. In his time on the court, he's been one of the better players on that roster.
Castle's sneaking up those rookie rankings, too, if you're over on NBA.com. Castle is sneaking up those rankings. He's been playing excellent defense. The thing about them, it's can Victor Wembanyama stay on the court? He's been dealing with injury this season in a way that we haven't really seen in the past. He's had back issues, which for a big man, concerning. Definitely something to keep an eye on. But when he has played, he has been dominant. And the first few weeks of the season, people were criticizing him for his three-point shot, including myself. But turns out he's shooting 40% from three now on about 8 attempts per game. So maybe the 7-footer who can shoot a three should continue to do those alien-like things as long as he's giving you production elsewhere. Real quick, before we wrap it up and go to Christian Fowler, I do want to discuss a trade rumor that has popped out today for the Memphis Grizzlies. It sounds like Cam Johnson may be available from the Brooklyn Nets. And 2 weeks ago, we talked about Cam Johnson because he had some quotes and the Nets had some quotes that made it sound like he may want to stick around in Brooklyn for a little bit and see what they can do. But ultimately, I think this is the correct decision by the Brooklyn Nets. You need to trade these guys away. Cam Thomas, Cam Johnson, they can give you a lot of value. Guys like Dorian Finney-Smith can give you a lot of value. There's no reason you need to be trying to win basketball games right now. To be honest, I'm a little salty that the Grizzlies are having to play the Nets really before they start trying to lose basketball games. You still have this young, scrappy team trying to prove something up there in Brooklyn that you've had to deal with a few times this season. But ultimately, the question is, would Cam Johnson make sense for the Grizzlies? And the answer is yes. Yes, Cam Johnson would make sense for the Grizzlies. In my opinion, Cam Johnson is the only guy I would necessarily be willing to trade someone like Marcus Smart for, because you would probably have to do something like Marcus Smart in a first, or Marcus Smart and Jake LaRavia in a first, to go get a guy like Cam Johnson. I have some hesitation about messing with the 10 out of 10 chemistry that you appear to be seeing from the Memphis Grizzlies right now. But if it's for a player like Cam Johnson, he is someone that can push you over the hump into true championship contention. So if it's Cam Johnson, I'm all for it. I think that makes a lot of sense. The other one that I've seen today around social media, Jimmy Butler. Does he make sense for the Grizzlies? No.
Nope.
No, he does not. Get that away from me. No, thank you. Pass. No. No, 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 no. You know what this team doesn't need? Someone who thinks he's better than John Morant. Somebody that thinks he's better than Jaren Jackson Jr. Truth-telling time, somebody thinks he's better than Desmond Bane. It's not Jimmy Butler anymore. Jimmy Butler's a great basketball player. Hall of Famer. Has been in the league for a very long time. Won a lot of basketball games. He is an aging star. He is someone who still thinks he is number one. He still thinks he's alpha. I don't need that guy walking into this Grizzlies locker room and trying to have dominance over this locker room. Because it's not your team. It's not your team, Jimmy Butler. It's not your team. Do you think he would take the Marcus Smart role? No way.
No.
No way.
Absolutely not.
No way. All the respect in the world to Jimmy Butler. He wouldn't be a fit on this Memphis Grizzlies team, though. Another team is going to get him if he is traded, and he will probably be successful for them. But they have got to find the right spot for him. It is not with the Memphis Grizzlies. There is a pecking order established here. Chemistry is established here. You've got that veteran in Marcus Smart here already. I don't want to mess with that. The only player that I have seen in trade rumors that I think makes sense for the Grizzlies long-term and short-term is Cam Johnson. I'm also not giving up assets to go get a guy like Jimmy Butler.
Doing it. No, at this point in his career and at this point with your roster, Jimmy Butler doesn't make a ton of sense. My only potential pushback on a guy like Cam Johnson is at this point he's shooting a lot more this season than he ever has. And the fact that he is shooting at a very high clip at 48% from the field. However, he's averaging almost 13 attempts a game, which I don't know in what type of role he would have. I mean, he's a really good 3-and-D player. He's got playoff experience. He's got just NBA experience. He's been in the league since 2019. But are his numbers going to look as good as they do with the Grizzlies, where he's probably not going to get that same type of volume? To me, Jimmy Butler's just not a fit, period. That's a non-starter.
Here's the only stat that matters for me with Cam Johnson. What are you shooting from three? His last 10, he's shooting 51% from three. And then during the regular season, he's shooting 43% from three. Sign me up. That guy standing in the corner with John Morant, we're already seeing a player like Jalen Wells excel in that role this year. Imagine if it's Cam Johnson
instead. I mean, hey, I'd sign up for that. The other good thing for him this season so far that the Grizzlies have struggled with at times, free throw shooting.
Yeah, 90%.
90% from the line.
90%.
If he can get to the stripe, which we've seen that he can.
Not bad.
Not bad.
If it's Cam Johnson, I'm all for it. Coming up, we're going to have Christian Fowler from Bluff City Media to talk about Tigers basketball, Tigers football, and college football playoff rankings. Stick around and listen to Connor Dunning on The Gabe Kuhn Show on 929 FM ESPN. Welcome back to The Gabe Kuhn Show. This is Connor Dunning filling in. Every Tuesday, we are joined by someone I like to call a Tigers and Cowboys expert. You can find him on Twitter and X at CFowlerBCM. He's the senior writer and content creator for Bluff City Media. Christian Fowler, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing wonderful, Connor. How are you doing?
I am doing all right. I want to get into the Louisiana Tech game real quick before we jump into the Arkansas State game, because last time we spoke, we briefly previewed that game, and we were talking about how Louisiana Tech is a better team than most people give them credit for. They were picked to win Conference USA heading into the season, which, I mean, just by net rankings alone, Conference USA is ranked higher than the American Conference. So even though that was a sloppy game by the Memphis Tigers, it was still a scrappy one that they were able to pull out.
Yeah, like you said, it's a better win than most people would think just off of name value, and it would probably hold up better, at least in the short term, if Memphis doesn't immediately turn around and lose to Arkansas State. But then the people that, you know, maybe a casual fan that doesn't know as much about Louisiana Tech and what they were projected to do in the preseason is like, okay, we struggled against La Tech, and then we lose to Arkansas State. Is this a cause for concern overall? Was this a blip on the radar? Is this something that we should be worried about the rest of the season? So like you're saying, yes, it's a better win than people realize, but it just immediately got masked. And in that game, it was kind of par for the course, right? Like PJ Haggerty played well, Tyrese Hunter played well, Memphis started slow in the first half. Like it was pretty much what we had seen from Memphis for the most part this season, and it was solid, but it's It quickly lost the headline once the Arkansas State game rolled around. So yeah. It's hard to give them a ton of credit for that one now because people are so focused on the Arkansas State loss.
Yeah, in the Arkansas State game, we saw all of the, you know, red flags pop up that we had seen in the early season. The first half woes by this team, having to come back a few times in the second half. We're really relying on two scores in P.J. Haggerty and Tyrese Hunter. And in that Arkansas State game that they lost 85-72, that's exactly what happened. They shot under 20%. In the first half from the field. They weren't defending the three-point line. And basically nobody could score the basketball outside of P.J. Haggerty, it felt like, for a very long time, and then Dane Danger. But most of that scoring came from the free throw line. They also had poor free throw shooting overall. You shot 67% from the line. You're not going to win a ton of basketball games doing that. You had 20 turnovers and 9 assists. Just overall, it just felt like the Memphis Tigers could never get their footing under them. And I thought Arkansas State did a really good job that any time it felt like the Tigers got that thing within single digits, it would balloon back up to 15 within 30 seconds.
Yeah, and with all that being said, I know there's a lot of concern right now. You know, do we hit the panic button or do we wait? I just don't think you can hit it this early. I mean, this team has been extremely impressive so far. We kind of know their deficiencies at this point, I feel like, at least for right now. We'll see how those change throughout the course of the season. But I think the one that I said is probably the biggest one. The slow starts have, at least for the moment, caught up with this Arkansas State loss. And we've seen it throughout the year. There's been multiple games where Memphis was favored in, but they went into halftime down because they just didn't start fast offensively. Offensively, it wasn't there, and then they found their rhythm with P.J. and Tyrese in the second half. And that just can't be the case the entire season because stuff like this is bound to happen if you continue to start slow. And then defensively, we've talked about the rankings, specifically the metric-based rankings, whether that be the Net or Bart Torvik or KenPom. And a lot of people were curious, why is Memphis, you know, in the mid-30s in most of these metric rankings? Their defensive efficiency was really holding them down in those rankings. And some of that was being masked just by wins and just by, you know, watching what they were doing offensively. But clearly there are some holes on this defense. And I don't think I think last year you could have really pointed to players, you know, just maybe not fully bought in. And I don't think that's the case this year. I think they're just not a great defensive team overall. They have to really rely on defensively, you know, turnovers, they have forcing turnovers, stuff like that. They're not just an incredible on-ball defense, and a lot of that has to do with the size of this team, specifically the backcourt. So I don't think we saw anything in this game that we haven't seen before. It just lasted for the entire game rather than just one half. So I'm not ready to hit the panic button yet. Also in this game, Tyrese Hunter only scores 4 points, mm-hmm. And they're going to have to be able to withstand that. I mean, P.J. and Tyrese just aren't going to be able to score 20-plus points in every single game. There are going to be games when P.J. is having an off night or when Tyrese is having an off night, like in this Arkansas State game, and they have to find a way to supplement that scoring early on rather than, you know, trying to dig throughout the game of who's it going to be and no one else being able to step up, because there just are going to be games when this happens and it can't be a loss every time. They're going to have to find a way to battle through that. But also, this shows that Memphis can lose to a bad team if they have an off night, which that may be a little bit concerning for conference play. But the hope now is you've seen it, correct it, and don't let that happen down the road. You can withstand it now, but you can't withstand that if it happens 3 or 4 times within the conference.
Yeah, on the defensive end, I think you saw the warning signs of the three-point shooting defense in that UConn game, especially in the second half when they were overhelping. They were almost pressing a little bit too much on the defensive end, and I agree with you. I don't think it's necessarily that players aren't bought in to the defensive, you know, scheme. I think that they're almost trying a little bit too hard. They're just overhelping, and they're leaving guys wide open for these threes. And, you know, credit to the other teams, they're knocking them down. And it seems like the game plan is we're going to fire up threes against Memphis and hope that those go in. That has really been how teams have put the Tigers, you know, up against it. And that's how Arkansas State was able to get this win. Because like I said, every time the Tigers would feel like they were creeping back into the game, it just felt like Arkansas State would knock down a three or two. And it would just absolutely feel backbreaking for the Memphis Tigers. I do want to ask you, though, because you brought up the slow starts to these games. What have you seen that is causing the Memphis Tigers to get off to a bit of a slow start in these games?
I think they're just cool offensively. They just don't start out hot offensively. I don't know exactly why. A theory of mine would be sometimes it takes PJ and Tyrese a minute to heat up. You know, like when you see PJ get to the foul line early, I feel like it helps him get into a rhythm early in a game. So those two guys specifically, we've seen it. It kind of just takes them a little bit of the course of the game to find their footing and to start putting up those points. And so to me, that's honestly the biggest thing. It's because your offense is so reliant on two players, and if those two players start slow offensively, the whole team is going to start slow offensively. So that brings in the question, you know, how do you fix that? How do you help with that? I've seen some people say, you know, start Dane again, bring Dane back to the starting lineup rather than Musa, try to get things going down low early and force defenses to funnel down low and allow PJ and Tyrese a little bit more wiggle room around the perimeter and the mid-range. And so I think there's definitely fixes for it, but I think that is the root cause of it. And then defensively, it's like it's exactly what you said. Sometimes it just feels like they're over-helping. The discipline is not 100% all the time. And if those things are tweaked, I think we can see Memphis build more first-half leads, and I think that's going to be paramount for the rest of the season. You know, not only in these massive games coming up with Clemson and Virginia and Ole Miss and Mississippi State, but as we've talked about and reiterated over and over again, there's not room for lapses in conference. And so if those things are tweaked, I think Memphis will be able to fix those first half miscues.
One more thing about the game before we move on. How concerned are you that Arkansas State may have given the rest of college basketball a blueprint of how to remove Musa Cisse from a game?
I would say slightly, but I don't think it's a secret, right? Like I think most coaches around the country, if they're preparing for Memphis, they can see Moose's inefficiencies. Like he's pretty much a net zero on offense. Like he's never been an offensive player. That's not why he was brought here, to be an offensive player. And it's also, if you pull him out of the paint and don't allow him to affect shot, then that's a win also. So I think the game plan for removing Musa from a game has always kind of been there. It just depends on style. You know, can an opposing front court attack that? Does a team feel like that's a big enough of an advantage to attack going into a game? So I'm not really concerned with it, because I think anyone that's watched Memphis basketball or any coaches that are scouting Memphis basketball can see those things. And it really hasn't been an issue for the majority of the year, or, you know, just in that fact for the majority of Musa's career. So I'm not overly concerned about it. Do I think it can happen again? Absolutely. But it's just there's a limited amount that you can do with that because of your depth in the front court. You just don't have too many guys to bring in and play over him. So I think if Penny and the staff know that there's a way to attack him, they have to have a counterattack to that also. And I don't know the answer to that, but I would imagine they're working on something to say, look, if they are pulling Musa out and they're attacking down low because he's not down there, or if they're, you know, funneling the offense towards him and making him have to catch the ball and make plays as a playmaker offensively, then we have to have something to come to combat that, and we can't just let that go throughout a game.
Yeah, and then after the game, the team did not do press. They did radio, but they did not do press. And, you know, overall, that's not something that I'm going to panic about or really beat the team up for too much. I'm just going to say it does feel like a bad look, though, when you come out and you have a poor performance against a team like Arkansas State. When it is that type of upset and you don't talk to the press, it's just something you don't want to see from the program this early in the season. It's nothing to be too concerned about yet, but it's certainly something to keep an eye on. And then Penny Hardaway after the game said that Arkansas State simply had them prepared, and these are like rivalry games, and to not see the effort and energy out of the team, he did say that's on me. And I do give Penny Hardaway credit there, where he took responsibility for the lack of energy that the team had coming out. And I can't help but wonder to myself if, with the four games they have coming up here at Clemson, at Virginia, Mississippi State, Ole Miss, did they just overlook Louisiana Tech and Arkansas State? Did they come back from that Maui trip and say, hey, we are a talented, good basketball team. We'll take care of business against Louisiana Tech and Arkansas State just because we'll be able to out-talent these guys. But we really got to be worried about, you know, at Clemson and at Virginia and trying to go, 3-1 in that four-game stretch?
Right. I think that's an extremely fair point. And, you know, we can all say that teams don't do that, and that's just simply not true. I mean, it happens not only in college but professionally as well, but especially in college we see it. Like, they're 18 to 21-year-old kids most of the time. If you get to the top and you feel like you're on top of the world and you see a team that's not very good, has no name value, you don't know any of the players on their team, it's kind of just that basketball or sports math that, of course, we're going to beat this team. We just beat UConn and Michigan State. But that's not the way sports work. It's who comes the most prepared and who's hot that night. So I think it's definitely a possibility. But one thing I will say about that is, if that was the case and this was an eye-open experience for them, that we can lose to anyone on any given night or beat anyone on any given night, you would rather have that happen now than down the road in conference play. Right. So that, if that is the case, I think that can be used throughout the season. So I think it's better to happen now than in conference play for sure.
Well, and to that point, the American is so bad that losing to Arkansas State in the non-con, in my opinion, is better than losing to Rice in the conference schedule. Like, when you look at Absolutely. The net rankings, like, the Tigers actually got some good news. This is from Jason Munns. Arkansas State went from 167 in the net to 124 after the win against the Memphis Tigers. And then, without them having to play a single game, they've moved 11 more spots up and are now 113 today in the net rating. So even though this was a bad loss, you absolutely don't want to have that at home. Biggest win in Arkansas State's basketball program history when it comes to upsets over, you know, a top 20 team. At the end of the day, the sky is not falling. And that's why the conversation about this Memphis basketball team is so difficult sometimes to have, because you have to toe that line of not holding the sins of previous teams and previous coaching staffs against this one, because it's basically a new coaching staff except for Penny Hardaway and a few guys left on that bench. And then when you look at the basketball team, it's a brand new team. Nicholas Jordan is the only guy that is left over from last season. So even though there are some similarities between the teams from last season, I still feel like I'm a little bit more bullish on this Memphis Tigers team than in the past.
Yeah, and I think what you said is a lot of Memphis fans need to hear that, because it's like, oh gosh, here we go again.
Here we go again.
Exactly what happened last year. It was wonderful throughout conference play. We've already drawn the parallels to the tournament of winning the first two games and losing in the championship game of the early season tournament. And then you have a disappointing loss, and it's like, oh my gosh, here we go again. It's the same thing. But like you said, it is almost a completely new slate of players, coaches, everything. So it's hard as a fan, I understand, to not hold the sins of the current team from the past years. It's very hard not to do that. But you have to remind yourself, it's completely different. These guys don't have the same mentality as the guys last year. This coaching staff is almost entirely different from last year. It is a wipe the slate clean, completely new team and staff. So you can't do that. You can't have that mentality and mindset. But in the same hand, I completely understand as a fan of teams that it's almost impossible not to draw parallels and draw comparisons.
Yeah, and then with the schedule coming up too, it could get tough here. You know, at Clemson, they're the number 16 team in the nation right now. Then you got at Virginia, good basketball team, even though they're going through a program change. And then Mississippi State is shown to be a very good basketball team, and then a big test with number 19 Ole Miss. If you can go 2-2, 3-1 in those games, I think that'd be a success.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You just don't want, if 500 is fine, you just don't want to go in the negatives
right
in those games, because then it really starts to look bad. If you go 1-3 in the next four, that would mean you were 1-4 in the last five with the loss to Arkansas State in there. And then you would definitely have the skies falling, people. And it wouldn't look good. Could Memphis still potentially control their own destiny and run the conference? Absolutely. But these games are not there to go 1-3 in. You know, that's not why Memphis scheduled difficult opponents. It's to show that they're among the best in the country. They'll have two ranked teams in that time, and Clemson and Mississippi State, if things hold as they are, with opportunities to get way bigger wins than they can get for the remainder of the season. So 2-2 to me is a success, especially if it's, you know, Clemson or Mississippi State, one of those ranked teams that are both in the top 25 right now. So it's a big opportunity, especially coming off the heels of that loss. And you would imagine this team is extremely ready to go out there and wipe the taste out of their mouth from the Arkansas State win and prove that was, like I said earlier, a blip on the radar and not an expectation of things to come, that this is going to be one of those roller coaster up and down. Sometimes you can be really good against good teams. Sometimes you can lose to anyone. Like, they have to be in a position now where they're trying to prove that that is not the case.
Yeah, because what the Arkansas State loss does is it just shrinks that margin of error for you. It shrinks the margin of error, but that is why you have the non-con schedule that you have, because you want to have a safety net heading into the American. Because, you know, I think it would be silly just to expect the Tigers to win every single game in the American. I think they have the ability to do it, but at some point they're going to drop a game, and you just want to make sure that safety net is there for you so it doesn't crush you when it comes NCAA tournament time, especially if you're not able to win your conference, even though I think most of us expect the Memphis Tigers to win that. Before we jump into the college football playoff, I did want to get your opinion on the Scooter's Coffee Frisco Bowl versus West Virginia for the Memphis Tigers. You know, to be honest, I was a bit surprised to see the reaction from Tigers fans. It seems like most people are upset with this bowl game where, you know, for me, I understand that you won 10 games in back-to-back seasons, and it feels like Memphis had a successful season, even though they didn't necessarily reach the expectation that most people had. But if you want to complain about a bowl game, my only response to you would be, hey, beat UTSA. You beat UTSA, yeah, and you're in a better bowl game.
Yeah, that's really all you can say to that. And at the same time, at this point in time in college football, bowl games are meaningless.
Right.
Like, they are absolutely meaningless. And that's why you had some of the college football purists that were arguing that the 12-team playoff is overall bad for college football because the other bowl games are meaningless. I'm not in that camp at all, because I kind of felt that way before. I've never really felt like bowl games had much of a meaning, especially since they went to the 4-team. So, look, I think you expanded more meaning of bowl games with the 12-team playoff. I think you at least slowed down some of the transfer portal stuff from those 12 teams for the most part. But overall, bowl games are meaningless. They don't really matter. I know it's nice to have the ring and to be able to say you won a bowl game, but if you're not going to the conference championship, if you're not at least on the fringe of being in the college football playoff, it doesn't really matter. I mean, look at, like, you think South Carolina's happy about going? Oh, I can't even remember what bowl it is now. Or Ole Miss is excited about going to the Gator Bowl.
The Gator Bowl,
like, Duke to play Duke. Like, no, nobody's going to be happy about their bowl bid if they're not in the college football playoff. So it's just part of it. It is the landscape of college football now. If you're not inside those 12 teams, then who really cares?
Yeah, I think for me, as a Memphis fan, I was just like, oh, it's not the Gator Bowl and it's not the Birmingham Bowl. Sign me up. I was like, yeah, I will take just a different bowl game, is something I was excited for. Also, a few fans out there, I've seen some people tweet out incorrectly that Frisco is in no man's land. It's Dallas. Frisco is Dallas.
Yeah.
Let's be very clear about that. They're going to a big city. It's not no man's land. So, you know, it is one that I think that Memphis fans could travel to. So I was appreciative of that. So hopefully people can get out there and support the Tigers against West Virginia, because it's a game that they should win. Like, they should be favored in this game.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. And I mean, it's a Power Four opponent. You have an opportunity to get the second win of the year over a Power Four opponent. It's not a great one by any means, but still, like, that's always a feather in the cap of a Group of Five school, is to be able to beat Power Four schools. So you have the second opportunity against a pretty decent brand name in West Virginia. I mean,
yeah,
they're not a powerhouse by any means, but West Virginia's had their moments where they've been pretty solid. So there's some decent brand recognition from West Virginia. And it's, like we talked about last week, another opportunity to build momentum towards next year. I mean, that's kind of what you have to look at it at this point. Even though it's going to be a very different team, it's better to end on a win than on a loss.
Yeah, we said it last week, but it is Groundhog Day, Memphis Tigers edition. That really is what this season has been. And you have an opportunity to get a big bowl game over a power team, gain some momentum heading into the offseason. You had a good signing day. You have good transfer portal. You got Antoine Hill coming in next year. So you want to keep that momentum rolling for the Memphis Tigers. Now, moving into the college football playoff, a lot of controversy from Sunday night. You got a lot of people that are upset that the SEC didn't get the quote-unquote bias that we thought they would heading into Selection Sunday for the college football playoff. But ultimately, I say that bias would have existed if not for a Clemson 56-yard field goal to win the ACC championship game.
I mean, if SMU doesn't come back in that game and Clemson blows them out, there's no way anybody can convince me that Alabama's not in that spot. And rightfully so. I mean, if Clemson, who has been up and down this season and had their moments, blows the doors off of what was projected to be the number 3 seed in the college football playoff, then you do kind of have to reconsider. And Honestly, this was a weird year. There wasn't a good example for it because, yeah, Bama lost to Oklahoma and to Vanderbilt.
Yeah. But
they didn't have much. I mean, honestly, you probably could have made a better case for South Carolina, in my opinion. Now, I know they had some ugly losses on there as well, but, you know, they lose a close one to Bama. They lose a close one to LSU, which didn't age well because LSU kind of faltered down the stretch. But they did beat Clemson, who was the ACC champion, and they had some other solid wins in there. So there really wasn't a good argument team. If there would have been a better argument team, like if, say, Bama would have lost to Georgia instead of Vanderbilt or Oklahoma, then maybe you could have had a stronger case there. But SMU kind of helped their fate by coming back in that fourth quarter and scoring on three straight possessions and making Clemson have to go down and kick a game-winning field goal. They put themselves kind of undeniable at that point. Like, if Clemson's going to be in, if they're the ACC champions, then SMU deserves to be right there as well. So I understand SEC fans. Obviously, I'm an SEC fan as well. But it just there wasn't a really good argument to make in this year and in this scenario.
And that's why I understand the argument for the SEC. They have to play a more difficult conference schedule than the rest of the country. There's no arguing against that. The most talent in college football is absolutely in the SEC. You know, pound for pound, the best teams in college football are in the SEC. Yeah, a middle-of-the-pack SEC team could probably win most conferences. I'll agree with that. That being said, you can't just put teams in based off the merit of their roster. Like, when you look across sports, when you look across the playoffs, teams don't get automatic bids because they have the best rosters. You have to win the games to get into the playoffs. And ultimately, that is why I keep coming back to, listen, I understand the arguments for the SEC. I understand that there needs to be some sort of bias in place for the SEC. That being said, when they're telling me about how difficult their conference schedule is and how difficult their non-con schedule is, and then I actually go and look at it and realize, oh, Alabama, how difficult was your non-con schedule in reality? I keep coming back to, well, if I had walked up to an Alabama fan in the offseason and said, here, I'm going to make a deal with you right now. I'm going to make a deal with you right now. It's July. I'm going to make a deal with you. All you have to do is beat Vanderbilt to make it into the college football playoff. I think every single Alabama fan and official would probably say, yes, we will sign up for that deal. And guess what? You lost to Vanderbilt for the first time in generations. So I'm sorry. I'm not going to listen to you too much when you lost to Vanderbilt. And you have bad losses on your schedule. That is why you aren't in the college football playoff. The ACC, you know, definitely threw a wrench in it by having a two-bid league when we didn't expect that. But the way that game went down and the way the committee ranked SMU heading into that college champion or into that conference championship game, they basically backed themselves into a corner. The committee put themselves in a tough spot, and then SMU and Clemson had a game that we didn't expect, so all of a sudden the ACC gets two bids, and Alabama is on the outside looking in. Sorry.
And you know the committee wanted to put Alabama in.
Absolutely.
So bad, but
that fourth quarter was a horror movie to them. Yeah, it was like The Exorcist.
They had no way to justify it. They were the biggest Clemson fans of all time in
100%.
That game. And they SMU ended up coming back and ruining all their hopes and dreams. So, yeah, I think you're right. I think years down the road, I think there will be a situation where we see it because I think there will be a better example, and there just wasn't this year. There was just no way you could really make a case for Ole Miss or Bama or South Carolina because – you talk about losing to Vandy. Ole Miss was the only SEC team that Kentucky beat, and Kentucky beat them in Oxford. So it's like that's yes, we know they beat Georgia handily, and they beat South Carolina handily. But you blow it against Kentucky, and then you lose on the road to a not great Florida team and to an LSU team that earlier, like I said, really faltered down the stretch. There's really no opportunity for argument there. And I will say, like, I know that's what a lot of people are focused on. I think my biggest complaint right now, and I think this has to be fixed, is it's got to be the top four.
100%.
It's got to be
100%.
The top four because
yeah.
You look at these brackets right now, and it is
it's nuts.
So lopsided. Like Georgia is – I don't know. I could be completely wrong. I know there's concern around Carson Beck, and Gunnar Stockton didn't look great this weekend.
He looked okay.
But it just feels like Georgia is going to – waltz into the national championship game. Like that side of the bracket is Notre Dame, who we all know is a fraud, Indiana, who in their only competitive game against Ohio State was massacred. And who else is it on that side?
SMU and Penn State.
Penn State, sure. Who I don't think anybody believes in. Penn State is as phony as they come. They didn't play anybody. Once again, could be proven wrong there. They could come on. I mean, they have the talent. They just haven't looked great this year.
Right.
And SMU, who for 3.5 quarters was blown out by a kind of underwhelming Clemson team. Like, that is Georgia's path to a national championship. And Boise State, who is a Group of Five team that really just doesn't have much outside of Ashton Gentry. So Georgia got a great draw. The other side of the bracket, you look, and it's Ohio State and Tennessee and Texas and Oregon, and it's just like you got one that you feel like three or four teams could probably win a national championship in, and then the other side of the bracket, it's really only one team that you would feel really confident about. So they got to find a way to even this out and to for it to be the top four seeds. Like, yes, absolutely, if you win your conference, you should be an automatic bid. I don't have any argument about that. But the top four teams in the college football playoff ranking should be the top four seeds and get the bye, or it's just going to be one team is going to have an unequal path every single year.
Totally agree. This is an imperfect system, and even though I can't necessarily disagree with the teams that got in based on the criteria that they had the entire season, what I disagree with is the seeding and who in the matchups and what the bracket looks like. Because like you said, Georgia has an easy pathway to the college football playoff. And then Oregon, a team that had the best season in college football, was the best team in college football, is gifted the winner of either Tennessee and Ohio State. And then they might have to catch a team like Texas in the semifinal. It's absolutely brutal. Now, real quick before I let you go, as the bracket is set now, would you pick is Georgia your favorite to win the college football playoff?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I know we've talked all year that there's just not one team that has stood out. And I agree with that. I don't think there's one. Like, let's not forget that the reason that Georgia's here is because they just won back-to-back overtime games, one of them being an 8-overtime game against Georgia Tech.
Right.
Like, I'm not forgetting that. But looking everywhere else, like, I thought Oregon was going to dog walk Penn State. I know the spread was close, and there's probably just some, you know, it's Penn State, they're a good team there. But I thought Oregon was going to blow Penn State out of the water. But Oregon's defense isn't good, and it hasn't been all year. Like, I think we knew that Oregon's deficiency was defense. I mean, they almost lost to Boise State and allowed Boise State to hang 34 on them early in the season. So they haven't been a good defensive team all year. But you look at Georgia, going back to the SEC bias, like, we know they're good on the offensive line. We know they're good on the defensive line. Trevor Etienne just came back. We know how good he is. We saw what he did this weekend against Texas. And, I mean, Carson Beck doesn't blow me away. I've never been on the Carson Beck train.
No, if anything, he was holding them back a little bit this season.
Exactly. So I don't think any of us were pounding the drum for Carson Beck. I don't think any of us were pounding the drum for Stetson Bennett, who won two national championships. Georgia is what Alabama was at the beginning of their dynasty run with Nick Saban, A.J. McCarron, Greg McIntyre. Like, they don't need a great quarterback. They just need someone who's going to limit mistakes and on a 3rd and 4 complete a pass, because normally they're going to be ahead of the chains and they're going to play great defense. So it's like I would put my money on the best defense and the best offensive and defensive line together. So I don't think Georgia's a perfect team by any means. They're very imperfect this year. But just looking at the field, it's like they've got an easy road. And then who knows who's going to come out of the other bracket. I think Ohio State's obviously number one or number two in talent overall in the country. We'll see if they can put it together. You got Oregon, who has a Heisman finalist in Dylan Gabriel. You got Texas, who's for the most of the season been either the best or the second best team in the country outside of games against Georgia. So it just feels like it's kind of set up for Georgia to walk through their side, and for – whoever comes out of the other side is probably going to be beat up and had a lot of close and difficult games to get there. I just would have to put my money on Georgia right now.
Christian, this was fantastic. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Y'all have a good one. See you next week.
Yes, sir. That was Christian Fowler. You can find him on Twitter at CFowlerBCM. When we come back, we'll be joined by the great Jeff Calkins. This is Connor Dunning filling in on the Gabe Kuhn Show here on 929 FM ESPN. Stick around.